Hi, I'm Josh, and hey, have you got, I believe in a thing called love? No. Oh, have you got Merry Christmas, Don't Let the Bells End? No. Well, have you got Stuck in a Rut? No, we're out of darkness.
Amazing. Hi, I'm Matt. And if you watched either Lumberjack the Monster or Out of Darkness this week, but not an Asian horror movie that was fantastic, then it's not Exhuma.
It's that. Oh, thank you. It took me a minute.
Arnold. It's a really bad Arnold.
I did like, you know, the last thing you want to do is be culturally insensitive, but this is Charlie Dunnelson. Last thing you want to do is be culturally insensitive, but I did the structure of the title of Takahashi Miike's new movie, you know, Lumberjack the Monster, is like, I do really like the idea of just like taking things that just don't make any sense in like the sentence structure of a thing. Like, it's just sort of like, it's like potato peeler on a Thursday. And it's just sort of like, it's neat. It's like, and you know what, you know, maybe there's a translation thing or, you know, whatever, but it's just sort of like, just that the structure of that title has made me very happy. Like, it's just sort of like, what? And it just rattles around your brain just goes, yeah, I can't help you. I've not tried, you know, whatever old Takahashi Miike is up to, just kind of go with it.
And we are all full Metal Alchemists on Horror Show Hot Dog. First up this week, we have a short called The Studded Nightmare, or La Pesadilla Taconada. I mean, what is a worse nightmare than having nada de tacos?
True.
Yeah.
Es malo.
Yeah. No es buen suerte. This is a short film about an evil chair. The chair has studs in it that hold the upholstery on. It's not a special looking chair, and it doesn't menace or move. But if you sit in it, it gives you crazy visions of crazy things. And seems to have led to at least to one death in the past. So kind of like Oculus, if the Oculus were a chair,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I really liked the way that this was cut together. It's like the way that it was shot wasn't like the best, you know, and the way that it was acted maybe wasn't the most polished, but for storytelling, it was really neat. The way that they parceled that information in this and trusted you to maybe make some leaps yourself. I thought it was really, really well put together, and I did not feel that runtime.
Yeah, it does kind of not. It does just kind of lean into the idea that there's not going to like explain a lot of stuff in a very just overly kind of verbose sort of way. Like, because you fully expect that to be a thing. Like, at a certain point, there's going to be somebody that's going to tell you all about the thing or whatever, and they intercut it a little bit, but but like, you know, so there's a little bit of that, but it's so breezy that it just keeps going. Like, it doesn't just sort of stop because if somebody came up with a good idea. It just sort of like, it just kind of just doesn't get hung up on itself, which I think is a smart idea. And yeah, it's like, it definitely kind of catches you off guard. It's like, whoa, what the hell's going on with this thing? Like, son of a gun. And it's freaky a couple parts there. It's like, whoa.
It jumps into the nightmarish imagery pretty quickly once somebody sits down in it, which I think is great. Yeah, I do think the exposition is limited just to that one line where he's on the phone with someone and she said, why did you pick up that chair? And he said, well, it just seemed nice at the chair. And he says, yeah, but I'm surprised your uncle would want it around after his friend died, or his cousin, whatever, died in it. Like, huh, yeah, that's the chair he hung himself from, and that's all we get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that works. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not too involved or just too too hung up on the ability, having to like explain so much. Like, there's definitely a few it kind of made me think of like how there's certainly some shorts during Chattanooga that were like, oh, well, you did have a good idea, but you got you get real hung up on having to explain a lot of stuff. And it's like, I get that you're excited about the idea, but you kind of shouldn't do that.
Yeah, shorts are pretty hard to work a lore dump into.
Yeah.
I also think, in addition to like narratively being interesting, one of the things that made me pick this one is when they do the crazy nightmarish vision stuff, you kind of get two different sort of logics behind them, because you get the initial one that's a little more like creepy, ghosties, succubus-y type thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get just full on like Evil Dead gore later. And I feel like they pulled off both well, which is pretty impressive to be able to do things that come from like a distinctly different like area of attack as far as like trying to get under your skin, and like to to be able to kind of pull both those off, especially in a limited amount of time, was pretty impressive, I thought.
Yeah, overall this was decent to watch. I liked a lot of what it did. They do a couple of cool bits with backwards film.
Yeah.
Which just shouldn't work anymore, but does just fine. In particular, the bit where the lady's on the floor and she like flings up into the air and flips over backwards and lands with the chair.
Yeah.
And you realize that that was reversed. You're like, oh, that's ballsy. That is amazing, though. Like, looks even better than that scene in Batman and Robin where Robin jumps into the pool and then he's pulled out of the pool by reverse film.
Yeah.
This actually was a lot better than that. So, well done.
High praise. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I say watch this. It's
yeah,
fun.
Same.
Yeah, I would say so.
So, you would say so. But I want you to say more, because of all of us who planned and promised and thought about going to see some Chattanooga Film Festival, Charlie was the only one who actually managed to follow through on that. So, Chaz, you want to take a minute or seven and talk about all the things that you saw and how they've changed you?
Yeah. So, you know, the Chattanooga folks, we really like them. And, you know, they've even though a lot of things trend towards the kind of more lower budgety things and more independent things, they tend to have a really deft touch when it comes to their programming. So I still kind of want to hang in with them. Like, yeah, everybody tries their best, but I mean, some people are just better than others. And I think that Chattanooga does a good job. They're very enthusiastic people. Yeah, if you watch some of the introductions for the Red Eye things, when they saw the programmers come in there, you can just tell that they're just overcome with enthusiasm, like sincere enthusiasm, not just like, oh, this is like this thing that like nobody's seen, kind of like that's not their thing. Mm-hmm. And so they instead just are very just genuinely excited about stuff. So I really like them. I like how they program stuff. I like how they approach things. And just in general, it just makes me really glad to kind of see what all the stuff that they're up to. Like I said, I really quite like them. So I did the remote thing. I wanted to be there in person. It would have been great, because there's some stuff that's only in person, but yeah, that's just how it goes. I tried to prioritize the shorts, because they have a lot of blocks of shorts. They have fun size epics, which is like, you know, short, long shorts, sort of. Like anything that's more than 15, more than 14, 15, 13, 14, 15 minutes, but like not like feature length, you know, like kind of like things that are in that like 14 to 27 minute range, like kind of that ballpark. Mm-hmm. So they have that one, and then they have Dangerous Visions, which is more like horror stuff, and then they have the WTF ones, which I'll be 100% honest, WTF is like my least favorite block, because like I just at a certain point I'm like, it's like it's that whole thing of like you have Renee Zellweger in your head that's like, shock me with your deviant behavior. It's sort of like, you're not going to, you're just not gonna, so stop. And so like that stuff gets a little bit on my nerves, where they're like, oh, here's this thing. I'm like, yeah, sure. But so, you know, that block is not my favorite, even though like there wasn't anything that was terrible in there, but I want to highlight a few shorts that I really liked, that I want people to kind of keep an eye out for, that I really kind of dug. The first one, at the very top of my list, was this one called Up on the Housetop, which was these four adult kids ranging in their like 20s to 30s range, around that ballpark, are all kind of reunited back home around Christmas time because of the loss of a parent or parents. And they're kind of in the family home, like trying to decide what they need to do and how to pack things and what to do with what they stayed and this, that, whatever. And there's like an intruder in the house, and they shoot the intruder. And it turns out the intruder was Santa Claus. And so then, as it turns out, the reindeer, not like turned into just avenging Angels of Doom, basically, because like avenge the death of Santa Claus. So they have to like fight against a bunch of reindeer. And it's like the chemistry. This is the thing. Like, if you got a bunch of a group of friends or people that are making a thing, chemistry is either going to be your best friend or your worst enemy. Because Matt, you say sometimes with movies, like, you know, they had a good time making this. It just didn't show up on the film. Like, it either is that or they really have a good click to them. And so in this case, they had a great click to them. They had a good rhythm. They had a good chemistry between them, the family, the people playing the family members. So that works well and it was funny. And I wish they had like 10 times the money because it would have been even cooler with the reindeer and stuff like that. But as I said, it was a hoot. I really, really enjoyed that one. I think that one was a lot of fun.
What was the title again?
It was called Up on the Housetop.
Up on the Housetop. Okay.
Then the next one, which was one of my favorites, I think it was Conlon watched quite a few of them with me. I think it was his favorite, which was called Robbie Ain't Right No More. And it was this soldier comes back home and, you know, kind of come back home with the family and all that kind of stuff. And it's like a little bit of The Thing, a little bit of Death Dream, kind of a, like, he has this, basically has this like parasite demon in him, essentially, that like he's like basically trying to quietly fight against, cause he doesn't want to harm family or that kind of stuff. But it's like this like battle that's going on that it kind of comes out. And then there's like kind of government stuff that's happened, but it is like, it is tense as shit. And like, it is very well shot. Like, very, it looks like a movie, like it looks like a movie. And it's just really good. Sad and dark, but just tense and extremely well made. That one, I hope shows up somewhere that people can see it, because like that one was really terrific. And then there's one that I really loved called Robert is a Serial Killer, and it's like this stepdaughter and her friend do the serial killer podcast, and they're like, she's going to uncover the fact that her stepdad is this serial killer guy, because he traveled to these places and these bodies were found, and she's gonna uncover that her jerk stepfather is a serial killer guy, and she's gonna confront him. And then it's like, but my business partner was on all those trips with me, and it's like, oh shit. So it actually was the business partner. And then there's like, but then they've gotten the mother into a fury, and she's going after the stepfather guy, and like all this hijinks. And it's just like, I've loved it for many. It's fun. It's a little loosey. It's a little offbeat. It's very dark humor. But I like a little bit of the indictment of like, you know, people who are not actually journalisting things. But it's also just funny. And Barbara Crampton's in that one. And it's a really, I don't know. It's a very, very, very fun little deal. And then, like I said, I mean, I go through like for like an hour, but there's like a lot of ones that, you know, they were cool concept wise. There was one called Redcoat that was like set at Revolutionary War times, and basically like, very like kind of like the kind of a morality play in like an isolated wounded soldier and this lady who's expecting a child, who's like isolated on this farm, or like what her prospects and plans are and stuff. And it's kind of a cool, would work really well on stage. It wasn't like one of my all time favorite ones, but it was really enjoyable. I thought it was cool. And I liked I enjoyed the thing that was found footage, if you can believe it. There was one, I know, you just knock you over the feather. But there's one called Spooky Crew that was like these like debunking crew, whatever. And then it's just on the precipice of being too cloying, but like they picked the pace up, and it's just this fun little romp into this just, you know, lunacy, which I like that. And so, like I said, I was surprised as anybody that I enjoyed that part of it. And then there's a lot of other ones that I'm kind of going through my list, just double checking my ratings. There's one called, I'm not going to try to be too negative here, but like there's one called Let's Go Disco. And it was like Jacob's Ladder by way of occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, but it was like LA dipshittery kind of thing, where it's like, oh yeah. And it was like, and so, but not only that, it's like a little LA kind of like nightclub, because basically it's like you go to this nightclub place and you kind of get stuck there essentially. But I put in my notes, bold is the filmmaker who puts feature length style credits at the beginning of a short. And I was like, oh, that's not like the best choice. Let's see. And then there was one called, let me get the name correct. The name one was called Madame Hattori's Isekaya. And it was, I was kind of off put by the description because they go on and on about, because it's about this like fancy Japanese restaurant. And how the dishes that you see in the movie are like designed by these chefs, these original creations. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, I don't, you know, like, whatever. It's like, it kind of put me a little bit on the defensive, but it is well made and well shot. And it's basically like, if you know what an isekai is, it's like, it's the second mouth. It's the thing that like, you can't, you know, when it goes to, when the demon goes to eat, like it goes, and the mouth goes nutty. So they never eat and you don't see him eat because they reveal their demon selves essentially. And this like high power chef lady is one of these things. And so like, but in the midst of this, all these like fancy fine dining things and whatever. And it's like, it's cool. And but it was just one of those things where like, it kind of felt like one of those know your audience type situations where I sort of like, it's like, oh guys, like that's you, I think your tone is wrong. Yeah. And you know, like I said, it was good enough to where, it was good enough for sure, but it was kind of, it was just a little bit strange because it was just sort of like, it felt very snooty and like I don't think the way that they intended to be. So, you know, like I said, it was well made, you know, certainly. I almost forgot to tell you that in our kind of neck of the woods, there's one called Lonely Portrait, which was like kind of Road Virus heads north by way of Creepshow. And like so the fucking thing, guy checks in his Airbnb. There's like this painting of a lady looking away like at a window, like looking like away from the person painting essentially. And he's like, we don't know that there's like a space over the fireplace, but no painting. And he's like, oh, that's weird. And then he's like, okay, well, I'm just going to kind of bebop around and order some pizza or whatever. And they like looks in one of the closets and finds this painting. And he's like, oh, weird. And like takes the painting out, puts it up there, this lady. And then the painting like changes. And then it's like, then it changes more. Then it's starting to look at her. And then he's like doing things where he, like every time he looks away, it's like one of the ghosts from Mario Brothers. So he looks away, something happens. And then he starts putting an object on the table. He looks away, and then the object is in the painting. And it was like, the first time it looks towards you, you leave. Yeah. And I put in all capital letters, vacate immediately. It's like, the fuck is wrong with you? Like, Jesus, Herbert Walker Christ. And then there was one. I don't know if you guys remember. Do you guys remember the Kickstart My Heart? Do you guys remember that one?
Yeah.
That was so lovely and really, really cool. So the lady who did that one has this one that she produced or directed called Inked. And it's like this girl's father dies in prison. She gets the ashes to do like a memorial tattoo for him. But wouldn't you know it, the serial killer from Shocker, they also curated him. And they got the ashes mixed around, essentially. And things go kind of manic and nutty. And I mean, it brings in her style from Kickstarter My Heart, where they got really good kind of Peter Jackson-y, moving the camera around and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit convoluted, just a little bit, but it's still got that staticky energy that Kickstarter My Heart had. So I was like, I just continue wanting to see this lady do whatever the hell she feels like. It's just like, so I don't think it's as good as that one. but it was cool that she had another one that was in there.
Yeah.
And just, and then not to, you know, like I said, not to go, I don't want to be too negative per se. But there's a couple things where there's one called Big Break where it was like, it was like a writer is like struggling and like the thing that he's written is like getting a mind of its own and wanting to like change things and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it is like, right. it is the epitome of self-indulgence. And it was like, mm-hmm. and I felt bad because I was like, okay, I watched it and I was so angry. I was like, wait, that's like a student one. This is a young person that doesn't know that when you reveal that it's actually a tomato, like it's sort of, it's that kind of thing. And I was like, well, I can't be too mad at this guy. Like, and I was like, okay, well, I'm fine. So there's a few of the student ones were kind of like, okay, what's not, you know, whatever. And man alive, we don't have enough time to go through all the ones that were like a really cool idea that just didn't land, but like weren't like bad. It was just sort of like, it's like, man, you hit a great fucking idea. It's a really interesting one called Garden of Eden, where it was like about this like voodoo lady and this plant that just like wants sacrifices and stuff, like kind of like a Little Shop of Horrors meets like kind of Creole, like old school bayou stuff, like, and great idea, just like the execution is not as good. One called Come Back Haunted, same kind of a thing. There's one called Outer Reaches that was very proof of concept. It's like there's a bunch that had great ideas, they just didn't hit on the execution, you know. So such as it is. But so switching over to the feature side, there's a few things I missed. I was bummed that I missed. But the real highlight, the thing I really enjoyed a lot, was they do the red eye screenings every night at 11 p.m. Central. They introduce it or just show some crazy thing. And this year they just like outdid themselves. They did Zardos, which we've never seen Zardos. Like, it's just, you've seen a picture of Sean Connery in that costume, and it doesn't make any sense. And it's just flying stone heads and weird sex aliens and Charlotte Rampling, like talking about like erections and corn stalks. And you're like, what is happening in this fucking thing? And I'd not ever seen it all the way through. So like, that was one of them. Nathan Hayes, which is a swashbuckling Tommy Lee Jones movie, which if you've never seen that, it's fabulous. Very, very enjoyable. They also did Pin, the crazy Canadian one, if you've not seen that one. They did that one night. I didn't watch it because I've seen it multiple times, but it was like for anybody who's never heard of it or never seen it, like, oh, your dreams are going to be fucked when you go to bed. Because like, that one is just like, it's never jumpy outy if you don't know Pin, but it's just very unsettling, extremely unsettling. They did that one. But then the outside of Nathan Hayes, which we loved, they did Wild Zero, which if you don't know Wild Zero, like, go learn about Wild Zero, because it is a fabulous thing. Comes out late 90s. It's a Japanese, I don't know if it's Japanese and Korean, but it's a Japanese one. And nothing makes, if I was to explain the plot of it, this is a garage rock band called Guitar Wolf, where each one of them has a different name, like Guitar Wolf, Bass Wolf, Drums Wolf. And like, they're like, it's like if ZZ Top kind of mixed in with like
the Ramones.
Yeah, the Ramones essentially, yeah. And like, they're like the sort of interstitial part of the plot. And you have this guy who's interested in this lady, but then there's like a drug dealer guy who's like a pimp also. And there's this alien, there's this like incoming aliens. And the lady that he's interested in is actually an alien, but they're trying to like keep the alien invasion at bay. And you have this rock band who has like magical powers and stuff. And none of this makes a lick of sense. And if I was to say, you know, you both have seen enough Japanese movies where like, you know, if you go on that side of that shrill, noisy thing that's a style a lot of times, it's like, this is fun, but I kind of get a headache. This like somehow avoids that, and it just stays fun. And like, it reminded me like of just like a manic Hunter S. Thompson road version of like of Complex World. Kind of like, and I just was like, it just kept popping and going, and just boom, 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 one fucking thing after another. It was a ball. It was so much fun. And there's like, then they.
This is a real band too. Is
yeah.
the crazy
way. Yeah, yeah. Oh, the soundtrack is incredible. Go so right. Go yesterday.
Like, it's basically like Hard Day's Night or a Kiss movie. You know, like Kiss Saves the Haunted Mansion or whatever.
That's the thing. Like, they're a real band, and it's a hoot. Like, half the time when they show up, they're very ZZ Toppy about the thing. And they go, whoop, and there they are, and they're like, hey, and they're like, burr, 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 burr. It's just like, and it's so. So goddamn much fun. It's loony and it's silly, and there's so many decisions that are made in this thing creatively that we're like, as Conlon said, I think they made all the decisions. Right. It never becomes sluggy. It never becomes like flat. It's just so much so much fun. If you go on Spotify, some crazy person has assembled the soundtrack. You can't buy it. It's like the soundtrack's incredibly expensive. But if you go on Spotify, some crazy person has like found it all. And so you go listen to some of the songs and stuff. And it's just I cannot stress enough how amazingly fun that was. So yeah, that was one of the other ones that they did. One of the night ones. Less fun, but I would say my favorite movie of the thing was a Swedish one called In the Name of God. And it is dark and bleak and very unpleasant. It's pretty much this about this priest guy who, his mentor has got into like these, like kind of ministry of the dark arts kind of stuff as it relates to like miracles and stuff, and kind of like forcing miracles to occur and what you have to sacrifice in order to do that. And so he's like, you know, churches are not super popular in that area of Europe. And so like by bringing about this sort of dark arts thing and like kind of conjuring miracles to happen and like kind of driving up interest in the church and whatever, and intermixed with that as a guy that like kind of calls out frauds and schemes and stuff like that. Our priest guy, his wife is dying of cancer and whatever. And it's like, oh, it's not a knee slapper, but it's really good. And like, it looks like a movie. Like it looks like a real movie for theaters kind of deal, but it is, it asks some very serious and heavy questions about the perversion of faith and acts for God and love God and just, yeah, just bleak as you can possibly imagine. It's really good. It was just, a bummer. And then there's one that I think, Josh, especially, I think you would really enjoy called Fix. It was this one, pardon me, it's set in South Africa where, like, there's this airborne thing that's caused like all this disease and sickness and whatever, and there's this company that's developed like the cure, but it's basically just sort of got to where it's sort of for rich people to continue breathing normally kind of a deal. Everybody else has to wear these crazy masks and have this whatever, and it's sort of a sci-fi action thing, and it's just it's well constructed, it's engaging, it's interesting, it's very impressive. It just feels like something that would have gotten released or been like a sci-fi movie kind of a deal, that it's ambitious and like just well done. Oftentimes with sci-fi ones, you kind of go, oy, like it's just a little much. And that one, The Fix, was really great. Also, the people that did The Fix, she came from South Africa to Tennessee to world premiere the thing, and then was so over the moon, and it was like that I loved. There was a really cool transpositive one out of Australia called Carnage for Christmas that I quite enjoyed. There was a bit of absolute bit of time-bending lunacy called Someone Dies, a very Shaggy Dog thing. Like if you like Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes, then that's a movie for you, because it doesn't, all the time travel stuff doesn't make any damn sense. But it's still fun. But the one I really wanted to highlight real quick was the one, another sci-fi one, Josh, I think you would like a lot, called Daughter of the Sun. Very good sci-fi thing. Very, very, very somber sci-fi thing, a la like Midnight Special kind of a, in that realm. Really good. But the one I really wanted to touch on, which, I mean, I'm going to be as surprised as the next guy when I say this next couple words here. It's a movie called Off-Ramp. It's about a pair of juggalos who are headed to the gathering of the juggalos. And it's like this road trip movie of them trying to get to this community gathering. If you know anything about the gathering of juggalos and their whole deal.
Do you get a Colt Cabana cameo as one of the pro wrestlers?
I don't think so, because I don't know what the fuck that is. but so here's the thing: like the first 5 minutes in this, I'm like, I'm not sure. Let's just see. But in the director's introduction, he said he's like, I just started learning about these things. I started doing some research on this community. I started traveling around, learning about it and whatever else, and it's turned into like this 10-year project of like working on this and learning about people, interviewing people, and I was like, maybe I ought to give more than 5 minutes. So I give more than 5 minutes. And then it was like, the people are dummies, like as you expect. They're just, they're ridiculous and like what you expect juggalos to be like. But in the course of this road trip movie, they like connect up with old people, and there's like some lunacy that happens and kind of off the road things between Louisiana and where is it, Ohio, where the thing is. And so it becomes this kind of breakdown road movie, but like, and really scuzzy at parts and really gross with certain things and some things that are unpleasant and whatever. It's a very hard movie to recommend because of some of that content that's in there. So it's very scuzzy, but like, it actually has a very legitimate, sweet thing to say about community and care for other people. And like, I can't describe how confused I am by saying those things, but like, it really does. It's just genuinely sweet and sincere and decent, and like, has something to say about the way that people that get cast out of other things could potentially care for each other and look out for each other in that way. Intermixed with this bonkers road movie. And so, yeah, I get to the end of it being a surprise to anybody else, but I really, really dug it. It was really lovely. And funny at parts and really gross at parts and just an enjoyable thing. Like, one of the two main character guys goes to prison for the other one for this thing, and like, he gets out of prison and they're like, oh, we gotta get to the Gathering of the Juggalos. In the course of this, we learn about their friendship, how they kind of got to get to be friends. And one of the two guys we learn is as transitioned. And that is fucking beautiful. I got teary-eyed with that thing because they don't make it a political thing. They don't make it a big old show or a to-do. But they just are like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, we love you when you're you, and we love you for you. That's it. And it's like, God damn it, movie. And it was like, you know, there's a lot of people with their heads up their backsides trying to pontificate all elbow patchy about this type of things. And this fucking road trip juggalo movie did it better. And so, yeah, Off Ramp. I don't know. I can't explain what the hell happened there. But it was a genuinely enjoyable thing. Then the last thing I wanted to mention was there's one called, as Matt, I know you clocked this title, but Cannibal Mukbang.
Yeah.
So I really kind of like, and I am extremely surprised as the next person, but I was sure that it was written by a dude because some of the stuff that the female character who like to eats things for money, but is also like this kind of a cannibal person. Some of the stuff that her character does and says, I'm like, that's written by a dumbass dude. And I was like, as it turns out, it wasn't. I was like, huh, I am baffled. I was like, yeah. I was like, so a lady could be a bro? Like, I don't understand. Like, I'm just, like, because it was just, because it's so the writing
that's
is so.
That's an outro song, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. And it's like, so it was fine until I just kind of got, I think it kind of wore out its welcome, where you just kind of get this like love struck dummy who like falls in with this lady and learns of the cannibal lady thing and kind of gets folded on the cannibal stuff and helps her with the entrapping. Cause basically she only eats people that are like bad essentially. And then he kind of gets the taste for it and this, that, whatever. And predictably kind of goes down, the whole thing kind of goes downhill. But I found it to have such a tin ear about some of the dialogue and some of her actions and stuff. And I just was like, I found it to be, like kind of in this weirdly juvenile way at parts where I just like, that had to have been written by a guy. But as it turns out, it wasn't. So like, what the hell do I know? You know, not the worst thing I've ever seen, but I just was like, I was kind of baffled by its kind of tone deafness at times.
Well, thank you very much for the report. I am intrigued by Off Ramp, especially because
I'm going to have to watch
all of the juggalos that I've met have been really nice and caring people.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not the most polished dudes, but definitely sincere and like offering a safe community for people. And I'm sure that's not everybody, but definitely a lot of people, it's kind of like professional wrestling where I had an idea of what the fan base was and it just wasn't that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I almost forgot one last thing. One other red light, not red light. Hey, one of the other red eye screenings was this one called The Beer Drinker's Guide to Fitness and Filmmaking.
Okay.
And I want to send you guys a picture of the cover right now. And the fellow that's introducing whatever else, he found this tape at some like estate sale or whatever. And it like says like great family movie. And I go, it's a fun thing. And this, whatever else. And like what it actually is. And the reason why I want to send this to you is that you can go on Vimeo. Somebody's ripped the VHS, which is the one that they have. So like, it's not like you're getting a better or worse quality of a thing. And it was this guy who'd been trying to be a filmmaker for a while and like had all his aspirations and goals and stuff and never really like achieved them necessarily, but like had a lot of these like kind of almost home movie style thing with his family that's like kind of funny and charming.
So kind of like American Movie?
A little, yeah, like a little bit of that realm where it's like, this doesn't, why does this exist? I don't understand. And there's just kind of, like I said, sort of anecdotal sort of filmmaking about like family stuff and about goals and dreams and things. And so I ended up watching, because I didn't watch it when they did it that night because I was really tired. But he said, oh, yeah, the VHS rip is on video. You can just find it. Yeah, kind of a wild, weird little scrappy dog kind of a thing that, like, I mean, for the title, for Christ's sakes,
yeah,
you know, the beer drinker's guide to fitness and filmmaking, like, that is a title that is unmatched.
That was a lot.
Yeah, that's it. And also the little pull quotes on the box, like, what? Especially after you watch it, you're like, this is not the, what the, no. What the ever-loving shit is going on here? And then another time when we have more time, when it's not too late, there's another one I really liked a lot called Canvas that I am extremely conflicted about the ending, but I'm like, but that's not the movie's fault because they made a choice, and just because I don't necessarily agree, it's like, eh. And so it's one of those things kind of like where, like, I can't hold against the movie because I don't necessarily agree with what happened, but it's still good.
But I can, yes. And like, I do.
I shouldn't, but I certainly do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and we all have that. We all have that conflict from time to time, sure, where you get something and you're like, am I just arguing with the character or am I thinking the quality's not good? Like, I wrestled with it for like 3 days. It's like, do I think this? Like, well, no, maybe. Well, no, that's not. And all that kind of personal morality versus projection, you know, all that stuff. Like,
no, it's the children who are wrong.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's anybody that's age 25, it's your fault. So yeah, there we go.
Nice. Well, let's pivot then and talk maybe about Out of Darkness for a little bit, and before we take our break or after we take our
before
break.
During.
Oh, there will be sounds to filter out of the recording, but sure. Let's talk about Out of Darkness or Del Oscuridad. This is one that I caught in the theater just purely by luck. It was a Scream Unseen that they just did for a night. And I will say, in the theater, this kicked my ass. Like, it had,
I was wondering if that played better in the theater.
It's a very... It felt very tense and scary, and these people felt so isolated, and the threat seemed so monumental, and everything is heightened in the theater, it turns out. And that, watching it again at home, I still liked it, but it didn't blow the top of my head off like it did in the theater. And the other two people I was watching with were just kind of, it was like a, yeah, it was okay. But you told us it was amazing. I'm like, yeah, well... I am a sucker for the movies where people are fucked by extraneous, fucked by external things before the threat even appears.
Mm-hmm.
Like in The Thing, the entire outside is trying to kill them.
Right.
You know, underwater. Or in this one, it's just, it is a miracle these fuckers have survived so long because they are in like Bronze Age. They don't even have wheels. They don't, you know, they're still living in caves. And so they're in a strange land and looking for food and starving, and just surviving is hard enough. And then something starts picking them off. And like, all of that's very neat.
Yeah. It's the setup. And that's really about it. Like, it's one of the things that I think works in its favor is like, you have this kind of cool idea of giving us a slice of life from a time period that doesn't get a lot of attention, which is pretty interesting. And the straightforward plot, I think, helps it. I do wonder, because I feel like my experience watching it was similar to what you described during your second experience. Because I would imagine a large, cavernous, dark theater, then, yeah, when they're sitting around that campfire at night and everybody's looking over their shoulder and they're, you know, wondering what's out there, I feel like that's a lot easier to, like, really invest in that situation. Whereas I was certainly like, oh, okay, cool. Like, there's this constant threat, but it was more of like an intellectual acknowledgement of that rather than like goosebumps, you know? So it was like one of those things of, you know, like the annoying thing we all do sometimes where someone will, you know, is this funny? And they'll tell you a joke and you go, yeah, it's good. And it's like, that's the worst reaction. And so like, yeah, like, oh, this was really tense. Yeah, I get it. Like it's so like it, you could tell it's working, but it wasn't like resonating emotionally as much as maybe it could have with a different viewing experience.
Yeah, I kind of wondered. I wondered about that too, because like I tried to see this during Fantastic Fest, but I couldn't either screening. I tried and then I couldn't get a seat. So I didn't get a chance to see this in the theater. And so that was a bummer. But I kind of am very in similar area, Matt, where I was like, you know, this looks incredibly impressive. Like it's you know, from a technical standpoint, it's extremely, extremely impressive, breathtaking looking, and just gorgeous. And that is above reproach. Like it's just the technical aspects of it are just excellent. Costume wise, you don't have anybody that has like modern face in the sense that it's kind of like you're those like just like dumbasses playing dress up. They don't have that.
Your name is Stacy. Come on.
Yeah, like exactly. And you don't have that kind of stuff where there's
a movie I was watching recently that had a modern face in a crowd scene, and it drove me fucking nuts, and I thought of our show because it's like, oh, that's the kind of shit we'd go nuts over.
So I mean, yeah, it doesn't have any of that kind of stuff at all. So from a technical standpoint, like it's just breathtakingly good in that respect. But the thing I struggled with, and maybe this is not the movie's fault, it's my fault, but the thing that I struggled with more than anything else was like I felt like there was not enough plot where that was my biggest problem. It was like 90 minutes or so, a shade under, I guess. But I felt like it didn't have 90 minutes worth of plot. Like it kind of, there's some tense stuff and there's some things and there's some suspense to it, certainly. But it just was like, I don't know. It was just, it felt like the story is like maybe a few pages long, you know? And I don't know. There's an inertness to the plot component of this and the characters that like, I kind of felt like arm's lengthy. And so this took me a few times to get through, to be real honest. Like I was really, and it pisses me off. There's a few things that piss me off more than watching movies or TV where I'm watching something I like and then I still conk out. Like there are a few things that make me more mad that I'm like, I'm really liking this. This is really cool. And then out I go. And so and it's like, and that's why I had just full disclosure. Like, I mean, it took me like three goes to get through. And at one point I like sat on the ground, like, okay, I'm gonna sit up on my one knee and I'm going to like suddenly I'm gonna get we're gonna, and then even then I kind of slumped back like a Raggedy Ann doll, and you know, and it was just like god damn it all. And you know, it's not because of the look of it or the darkness of it, because I watched plenty of weird foreign shit that's all nobody's ever heard of a light ever, and it's like, and I can stay awake no problem, so it's not that. But it was more just sort of like, it just kind of got to where it was like, and the best way I can think of it, and maybe this isn't even fair, but the best way I can think of it is like when you're playing any kind of RPG game where you have to like, they don't have a way to speed up the walking. Like that's what kind of it felt like to me, where I want to advance the story, but I just have to keep walking this way. And it's like, man, is there a way to make this go quicker? Like there is not.
So you're playing Death Stranding. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just sort of,
if you're a guy who likes the Lord of the Rings movies, you might be able to.
But I think like I can totally see that's kind of maybe how that landed. I mean, but I think that does tie into that whole idea of like, if that tension's high enough, that's enough.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't have you in its grip, it's going to, yeah, you're just going to be kind of waiting for the next thing. And, you know, watching people, you know, furtively glance about isn't that interesting if you're not also as concerned about whatever they're looking for. So, yeah.
And when you get into the, like the scene in the woods where our leader guy gets it and the aftermath of that and all of that, just really unpleasant amount of gore.
Oh like, God! That was
wild.
The set pieces in this really go for broke, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and it's just tricky too, because like, you know, and I may be speaking for myself, but you know, when you watch a lot of things, when you watch things that are set at different time periods, like, and you can get things that are very plot heavy, or you can get things that are kind of plot light, and it's more about the show of it or whatever else. But depending on the style of it, you know, you can really get into the texture of stuff, like Sauna, that one Norwegian one that like is great and then stops making sense. That one's very textural like this. Or you go more like the Centurion route where you get like all this cool swords and sorcery kind of shit, but it's extremely violent and bloody and back, like lots of shit going on. So you can go that route or whatever. But when you get into this kind of area, like I said, I just felt like it was like more like plot light. I just kind of got to where I was like, I want to see how the story goes, but I'm not as invested as I would be in a story where, you know, people had sneakers or like a car or something. And that's shitty because like it's not, I mean, tell the story you want to tell, but it's like it requires more work on the part of the viewer, I think, when you get into areas that are super far removed. Where you know, like you can have certain reference points. Even watching Shogun, I'm like, well, you know, there are people and there are people that are merchants, and this guy does fish and this guy does bamboo shit. And, like, I can kind of piece together what commerce is, even 16th century or whatever else. But this just kind of removes it way far away from any reference points that you can grab onto, and so it just makes for, I think, harder, heavier lifting. That was maybe why I kind of felt like the plot part felt so light.
Yeah, and I agree. If it's gripping, you're not thinking about them standing around because you're still feeling that menace that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I felt it in the theater and I didn't feel it at home. So I think the sound design even has a lot to do with it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's like we watched it in a dark room with my phone down, but still didn't hit quite as hard. But I still like enjoyed it quite a bit. And I'm curious what y'all thought about that last bit. So we find out that the people who have been, or the monster that's been hunting the party, is a concerned tribe of some other offshoot of humanity, you know, like a Homo sapiens versus Homo versus Neanderthal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And going back through it this time, I realize it's true. They don't kill somebody until they're attacked. Because they take the kid because they see the leader guy hit the kid. And they can tell that everyone's starving. So like, well, obviously this kid needs the most help. So they take him and he's still alive. The pregnant lady gets killed by the monk.
Right.
And they take her body so that they can honor her, they say. And they only kill leader guy when he comes into the woods yelling and attacking them. So it's a weird thing to make that switch right there at the end, but it actually did hold up going back through that. Like, this seemed like some inhuman monster that was stalking you, but it was just another type of you.
Yeah.
And like those monsters you were killing had families, you know, it's like the end of I Am Legend. Yeah. So like the right.
Well, it's the, right. I think it's the best possible way to execute the real monsters was man all along. And it's like, when there are two different kinds that doesn't sound as corny and cliche. Like, cool.
No, and it's also just neat. Like, this is the first time that this has happened. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, oh, now we're bummed. It's now we're going to be more careful about who we think is a person, who we think is a monster. Like, that's weirdly optimistic for something like this. I was into that.
True.
Well, and then also too, like they do mess with you as a viewer, because early on you're like, okay, strangers in an unfamiliar place, whatever else. Like, okay, we're gonna have a monster situation, and you know, like a la like Burrowers or Splinters, something. Mm-hmm. You're just gonna have a monster of some kind or whatever. And the fact that you don't necessarily see it in the way that you would expect. But then I thought about this a couple of days later after finally getting through it. It's like, yeah, but they present it in such a way that if you're off in the woods someplace and you hear snap, crackle, pop, and you're like, I don't know what it is, but your mind is telling you about 1,000 different things about what it could be. And it's sort of like, and that's great, because then you're like, that makes it more scary. But then, yeah, if you get the data at the end, you're like, okay, reverse that and go like, if I'm a thing in the woods that's also working hard to stay alive, and you're seeing this thing, and it's like there's a the only sound that you hear is sounds aggressive, and the only thing you see is a violent something or other, you're like, that means I'm in danger. It's like, that's interesting, because you kind of get to that, you would expect the thing of like, the monster, we're not so different, you're like, that kind of nonsense. But instead it's more just sort of like a, how is the threat perceived? It's like,
that's what everybody does with imperfect information.
Yeah, and like that was a very clever. I thought that was certainly clever. you know, there's a couple little moments with the monk guy and with leader guy being like, I'm going to crotch grab you because you're my property thing. Like, there's a couple of moments like that that I don't know really what the point was necessarily. Like, I don't know what civilization was like 40, 50,000 years ago, whatever. But like, there's a couple little moments that sort of like kind of felt a little bit over-choiced, like as far as a decision to be made. But
you know, Jack picked up on that too. At the end of it, she said she was kind of bummed that they couldn't imagine a society where women weren't treated like property, because like, we're in prehistory here. They could have done anything, but they have that same. She's like, why couldn't they have had like a matriarchal society? Why did it just have to be all these same old power dynamics? And
well, so that's kind
you're
of
not alone in that assessment. Yeah,
well, it just kind of was a little interesting. I mean, like I said, it wasn't so glaring and awful that it was like, oh, crying out loud, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was enough that it was like kind of stood out just like a little bit, where it sort of like saying, okay, well, this seems weird. And I do like it when somebody's doing stuff that's way, way early history things, where they don't fall necessarily into those traps. Because like, yeah, if you know enough about old timey history, it's sort of like, yeah, it's not like this women are property thing. It's not exactly like it's been for all times. Like, there are plenty mm-hmm. of societies that like women were the things that ran stuff. Like, I love that. And if you watch the series Vikings, where like Catherine Winnick, you know, God love her, it's one of the coolest women. And like, I love that early on that they established that, this idea that like, women control shit, women own shit, they have huge influence. And oh, by the way, some of them are fucking Valkyries. So like, you want to mm-hmm. you want to step to one of them? Like, good luck. Mm-hmm. And so the women have agency out the wazoo. And so I like it when that kind of gets brought up in things, because like, it's not this idea that women are just like property or second class citizens, whatever else, is not a thing that is true universally, or definitely is not true for all of history. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So I kind of like it when things sort of lean into that a bit more. And I was, except just ever so slightly kind of taken aback by that choice a little bit. It was a little weird to me, but nothing major.
It wasn't like it's imaginable, right, that a society, an ancient society, could be like that. It's just that it does seem like the easiest choice, the safest one.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a slightly easier choice. Doesn't feel, I mean, you know, I don't know enough about this time of history. I don't really know much a ton about it, but it almost one could argue that it's ever so slightly anachronistic in a weird way, but like, I don't know. It just sort of stood out just a little bit. Like, oh, well, weird. And it's like, and then later on the monk has a line, and we're like, that doesn't feel right. But yeah, like I said, these are minor things. Like on the whole, they really seem to put some serious effort into getting this thing put together in the way that they did. So I really admire them for that. I just would have, you know, I would have liked a little more plot, but maybe this was the size of story that they wanted to do. So, you know, that's okay.
This is his first feature, it looks like.
Oh, wow.
He's kind of a TV director and a shorts director.
Very polished.
Yeah. So maybe if there's a little bit of pacing in this, that might be part of it. Might be an artifact. But I'd say, just to wrap on this, like, I am glad that I have that experience of the dark theater and just being completely spellbound by this. It's a bummer that it doesn't translate to that experience at home, but I still thought it was a worthwhile experience. This is not the kind of thing that I've seen before, and I thought it was well worth doing what they did. So for me, it's still like an 8 out of 10 Tongan a la Tongas.
I think the way you described it there, Josh, makes me think that that's exactly the experience I had seeing Blair Witch Project. Scared the ever-loving fuck out of me in a huge dark theater full of other people that were scared, and didn't even work on a second viewing in a theater when not everyone is invested, you know, and it certainly doesn't work as well on TV, I think. So yeah, maybe this is one of those, you kind of have to see it, you know, at a revival screening somewhere to get the full impact or whatever. But yeah, all that said, that's didn't have the same punch as it maybe could have. I definitely felt the wrinkle with some of the sexual politics that come up in the thing, where as far as I know, they didn't matter much as far as what was going on. So it just kind of irked me a little bit, but whatever. A lot of what they're doing is cool. So I'd say it's a solid effort. While not maybe the scariest thing in the world, but at this point, honestly, not a lot of things are scary anymore. We watch too many movies. So like seven out of 10, 7 out of 10 furtive glances in the darkness.
I will only ever associate the word furtive with like furtively masturbating behind a bush. It just seems like that was the context it always was in. Like, she heard a furtive rustling from nearby.
It definition was really holds a mirror up to the definer, doesn't it?
I'm kind of just saying, if my glances were any more furtive, I would have come already.
They'd be obscene. Yeah. Okay.
What you think about the comedian, the British comedian John Richardson, talking about like having a like being out like out of like a nature thing, like out away from everyone else, and nobody anywhere nearby, like seeing like an area, like a kind of secluded area, and be like, well, maybe I'd have like a I'll have maybe a personal moment, and then being like, but what happens if somebody gets murdered there, and then there's going to be some of my DNA. It's like, and then also just like fretting about that. I'm like, oh, for God's sakes.
Damn, I had already taken out the Playboy and stuck it to the tree.
Oh. I just gave a couple of squirrels a peanut. And they're like, would you just hold this, please, and look away? Thank you. You look towards me. You look away. You both look away.
Like, don't look at me. Don't look at me. Now look at me. Now don't look at me again.
Twitch your tail just like so. This got a little weird. So I want to be a little bit out of the totem pole, but not out of animosity or like negativity necessarily. Like I said, I was very impressed with the way this was made. There's just enough where you know, just about the kind of the plotting and some of the things, but I just, you know, like I said, no animosity whatsoever. I think this is very impressive and very interesting, a thing to do, and certainly ballsy to do a thing that's, yeah, there's no footholds whatsoever that the average person can glam onto, because none of the characters are very big sized characters. It's not a ton of dialogue, so it's not really like there's like things that you can be like, oh, I recognize that, or that looked like my street, or I had a car like that, or whatever. Like, there's none of those footholds whatsoever. So, hats off to them for being very, very bold in what they're trying to do. So, I'm gonna be a little bit on the total pole a little bit here. So, I'm gonna say 6.5 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10. Because for the rules, now this is awkward, but this is my cave now. Out of
10. No, what they say, a man's cave is his cave.
A man's awkward
is his cave. Yeah. All right, I will be back in a moment, and so will the rest of these guys, and we'll talk about more stuff.
Woo. Yes, sir.
Man, I just remembered my other intro for this week was going to be some take on the Monty Python Lumberjack song.
Oh,
but alas, I'll leave it as an exercise for the listener. Okay. But Lumberjack the Monster, or Leñador el Monstruo, is a movie from Takashi Miike, which means it is a capital M movie that takes place in the realm of movies. Stylized, I think, is what I'm going for.
Yes.
It is beautifully shot. It is absolutely bizarre. And it kind of dragged me along, even though it has one character who is maybe sympathetic.
Yeah.
And
I think
barely.
Yeah. My two sentence summary that I have in my little list here is so high concept, you can barely see it. Pretty good though. So I think it does. It's Miike being Miike in his way, which is out of, I guess, what, 60% of the movie kind of going, what is the point of all this? And then as it starts to come together, you realize, oh, wow, they landed this plane. Like, by the end of it, I understood everything that happened, who was playing who and who was getting revenge on what and who was fighting for something or against something, who was actually good, who was actually bad. And by the end, I think I fully understood all that. So I had to kind of revise my opinion at first of going, I don't like this much, to, okay, I think this is done well. Do I like this movie? And I'm still not entirely sure.
Well, and that's sort of that's the thing. It's kind of the thing with Miike. Like, you kind of go back over and like, and he's one of those ones where like I will never not, especially when there's been ones at film festivals, like I will always make a point to go, and there's no guarantee, because like, I mean, fucking, when I was thinking about this when we were getting ready to record, like when I saw Over Your Dead Body, I saw that at as Stanley, and I loved it. It's like it's a play inside of a movie thing, and it was great and interesting. Yakuza Apocalypse, I could barely stay awake for. Lesson of the Evil made me so mad. I was mad about it for a week. So, like, dude has a different way of affecting the viewer, like, in ways that don't make a goddamn bit of sense. You know, and so he's, but yeah, subtle and small is not his way. And, you know, there are ones that are Korean and Japanese movies that can get into the serial killer stuff in ways that are like, I mean, I love Confessions of Murder and Memories of Murder, both, especially Confessions. Like, that one is a high flying, great suspense, awesome thing that, but it's more linear. It feels more accessible in that way. But like something like this, you're just sort of like I don't really understand a whole lot. I mean, I get the framework of it, but they're just going to keep giving me more stuff to, and this lady's got the plan and they're going to get the guy, but he's like in plain sight and people are aware of it, but they're not aware of it. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess I'll have to just let it go for a little while and see if I get some more data that make any sense. And it's just doing that.
It's like the part that I think was so confusing for me is that it's doing sort of the same thing that like a heist movie does, like a Ocean's 11 movie, mm-hmm. or something, where you've got all these moving parts and everybody's got their angle and it looks like there's no way this is all going to like work at the end, 'cause you can't understand the half of it. And then they kind of pull off, not a heist in this movie, but they pull off, like, the movie itself pulls off the heist of like convincing me that I understood the plot, mm-hmm. and you know what I mean? And it's, so it's like, again, I'm left with like, I think this was well done, but I guess maybe, right. I spent too much time thinking about it as a movie as opposed to just like absorbing the story. And that's where the disconnect is. I don't know. Go on, Josh.
Because the baseline of this is that a completely amoral person who has crimes that we find out about later is like seemingly randomly attacked by a slasher. So you have like sociopath versus slasher. And he's like, well, fellow sociopath friend, what do you think we should do about this? And like, well, I'm going to find him and I'm just going to fuck him all the way up. Seems to be like the way he deals with the situation. And at the same time, he has a girlfriend who seems to be long suffering and is like the only person that you could maybe relate to in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it is true that it seems to start with the premise of what if sociopath and serial killer, and for a long time just writes that.
Yeah.
And then it does bring in another layer of plot towards the end of it.
Well, with all the computer chip stuff and like people being deprogrammed from being a sociopath, or perhaps being programmed to become a sociopath. So our good guys and bad guys are flipped partway through the movie when we realize that each one is operating under the influence or lack of influence of this particular thing. And so it becomes this whole idea of like, what's the, you know, it Clockwork Oranges itself. Is like, is it the greater crime to take away someone's sense of self, right? Or is it allow someone to be his? And so you get all that in there and you kind of go, God, I didn't really think this was all going to pan out again. And you kind of go, well, fuck then. Is this good? I still don't know.
Because you have like mad scientist family.
Yeah.
Had a kid who was a sociopath. And in order to try curing him, they wanted to figure out how to make someone a psychopath, and then they could reverse engineer how to unmake one, was the logic. Like I said,
in true mad scientist fashion. Yeah.
Not like sober and ethical scientist.
Right.
So the guy, our other sociopath, is directly because of that situation. He was one of the kids that was experimented on, and so he's just never had a conscience. But at first, we think he has never done anything evil, but then we see that, yes, he absolutely has. And that the killer is the kid who got cured and knew he had to hunt down the other experiments. And I can see this unfolding like that weird witch paramovies that we watched, where it's that whole movie that... the whole Lumberjack the Killer movie would have been the first 20 minutes, and then it would have just been lore the rest of the way through. And instead, it's just we get the little exposition dump at the end, and then we're done. So I don't know, like it seems like a more of a stream of impressions on like the base of my neck or something than a story that I fully inhabited and understood. But it was not boring, and it was fun throughout, but not my favorite of the week. I think it's down at like maybe a 7 out of 10. I have to ask you just off that.
is this based off like a manga or something or an anime?
It is.
Okay. That makes sense. Cause that's looking at this, I'm going, this seems like the kind of thing that would have been studied over a longer period of time. Like these characters and like the outcomes and the inferences and all that. It seems like the kind of thing that should have taken longer to unfold. And so maybe that's where some of that disconnect was for me, of like spending so much time on the nuts and bolts of it that I couldn't enjoy the art of it as much. So maybe that would be interesting to kind of compare the two. Also the weird lumberjack guy looks awesome, but I'll say this lands at like a 6 out of 10, and that's all on like, clearly this is someone that is good at their craft, creating a thing. It just doesn't have the heart in it that I'm able to identify with.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the middle there. I sort of like, I mean, there's enough in here that keeps you, that doesn't dismiss you as a viewer, which sometimes be case movies will do that, where they just are like, you, the viewer, fuck right off, but don't leave, but you fuck off.
Give us your money.
Which is more of a French approach, really. But like, it's you know, it's like some of his stuff. Like, and I've certainly not seen all of his movies because the guy's extremely prolific. So I've not seen a lot of them. But there definitely is that thing with a lot of his things where you're just like, there's an arm's length kind of esotericness to it, which is just like, and so this doesn't have that, which I really was glad about because it keeps you more. It feels more like there's a beginning, middle, and end in that way, which is like, you know, duh, but it's for me, it's hit or miss. So it keeps you in there. And it's enough, there's enough intrigue where this whole group of children that got the little USB ports in their heads and that whole deal where like, that's interesting enough into present time. You know, the dynamics are compelling. And so I don't know, it's just got a lot going on, but not in a way that you just kind of go like, I couldn't describe the plot to somebody if asked, so which I'd call that a win. So yeah, for all the things it's got going for it, for sure I would say I'm gonna put, like I said, I'll kind of fall right in the middle there. I'm gonna say 7 out of 10. I hate it in movies where there's a scene where somebody like throws a thing or does something with some kind of object and you're like, you wonder how many takes it took, or like we throws the thing at the camera and in the little courtyard. I'm like, I wonder how many times they had to do it before it actually hit the thing. And I was like, why am I thinking about that? Just let the movie do this movie thing. Just quit it, brain. Out of 10.
Perfect sense. Now, finally, we can talk about Axioma or Desenterrado. This is a Korean movie about the art of geomancy, which apparently is the thing that you have in Korea, where people, their whole job is to find the right place to bury someone, that their burial plot should be located. And these folks are tasked with removing someone who was buried wrong and is pissed about it and is murdering his ancestors or his predecessor, is later people, as Spawn. And
there you go.
Spawn. And so like the first half of this movie is dealing with him, and they deal with him, but then there is something deeper in the grave, and then there's a like an 8-foot-tall samurai who can do magic things, and it's all down to like the Japanese-Korean war, it seems like. And I got lost in this, I'll be honest. Like, this is two movies kind of yoked together uneasily for me. The first one, like, I started falling asleep a little bit after they got the first dude out and everything. and remember pausing it and going, holy shit, there's another like hour 20 on this. Like what are they doing now? And so the next morning it was like watching a different movie and putting them together and realizing they're the same movie. It was like, shit, there's too much going on in here. And the end of it kind of lost me because it feels like it goes into some heavy Korean history and politics that I just don't have access to.
Yeah, I think, though, that while it does do some of that, there's also just, like, yeah, the weird folklore, like, and just different, like, the idea that these kind of cultural ideas of, like, geomancy and whatnot having these, like, real-world consequences with monsters and craziness and stuff, I was kind of like, okay, cool, this is giving me the same, like, I love weird shit like this that like a Hellboy thing gives me. So I was like, all right, I'm fully just kind of having fun while not worrying too much about the details, which I think is the exact opposite of what I just said about the last movie, which is totally unfair. But, you know, such is the capricious nature of liking art. So, yeah, this one just like kind of scratched that itch for me. And I had a lot of fun with this. I would agree, though, that it's, I would have a difficult time really trying to dissect all the parts, but I think they made a fine looking cake.
There's some cool stuff, like especially in that first half. I really liked the way they portrayed the ghosts. Like it was a visual I hadn't quite seen before, mm-hmm. where they flicker a little bit like cinema, but they don't do the like early aughts head wobble thing.
Right.
They just kind of like a new way for ghosts to look creepy is pretty impressive. And like Giant Samurai is awesome looking, and the things that he does are fascinating. But that was when it got like, okay, so the spirits say that we need to do blah blah and this and the thing, and you got to put it back. And you know, General Yokohama says blah blah blah. Like I have no context for this.
Well, and not getting things like who. At any point in this, especially in the first two-thirds of it, really, is there's so many parts of this where you're like, I don't know who the reliable person is, and I don't mm-hmm. know who the unreliable person is, and, well, I don't know. I'm just going to have to kind of assume that Squarehead guy knows what he's talking about, at least right now. And it's like, well, no, Squarehead guy doesn't know what he's doing. And then you're just like, and then another guy will be like, okay, well, no, he's full of crap, but this other thing is the real thing. Like, okay, well, clearly all this stuff is fake and make-believe. And it's like, no, this is there. All these supernatural things are super literal. Like, all right, well, okay, we'll go off that assumption for a little while. And I was like, so you just kind of like, it keeps moving around to where your anchor is. And like, so, I mean, to Josh's point about there being kind of two different movies in there, like, I think that's definitely true, but I would say there's probably even more than two, and it's just in the way that, like, at any given point, are we kind of following up the guys that are slightly charlatany about their business, or are we kind of following along this thing, or like this, like, wrong thing, or are they going to assume it's a wrong thing, or they're going to unleash something that's bad? And it's like, how much influence does that thing have? And it's just sort of, this kind of continues to change shape as it goes along. But I was really dialed in on this one. And just in general, like, yeah, I really, I don't know, this, by and large, these type of expansive, wild idea Korean things, I really dig. I really like them. And so I was just kind of like on for the ride. Just give me more data, whatever. Just whatever more data you want to give me. Just let's go right ahead. Mm-hmm. And then just being completely thrown for a loop when they're like, oh, and then they're going to be in Los Angeles for like three scenes. Like, well, okay. All right.
Los Angeles or Oz. Right. Yeah. Man, that city on the and the matte painting in the background was really fun. Just brightly yeah. colored.
God, I love when that occurs. Like when wasn't that show that Patricia Arquette did the psychic
medium.
Medium, yeah. Where they're like, oh, we're gonna go down to City Hall. Like, that's not City Hall. City Hall is an upside down triangle. I grew up born in Tempe. Like that's cute. Like, oh, we're gonna every time they do anything in Arizona, there's always that thing of like stuff in the background, like that's a normal palm tree. That's not one of the industrial palm trees that actually grow in the desert. And this is like, you are not anywhere near Phoenix for crying out loud. What's wrong with you? It was just watching, we were rewatching the last part of West Wing, and there's one part where they're supposed to be like on top of a building in like Houston. And it's like, no, the fuck you're not. that's not Houston. Like, get right out of here. And so there's that kind of stuff for sure. It's just, you know, I don't really know. Like, I could probably just fumble around talking about this movie for like an hour, but I don't know. I was really into the lore stuff. Like, Matt, I think you said kind of like in that Hellboy way, mm-hmm. where you're sort of like, here's some super deep lore. And you're like, what all, how does that make sense? And like, it doesn't. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does it happen? Not particularly.
My natural reaction to like crazy lore shit like that that I'm not familiar with is just, ooh, and I get like excited. I lean back and try to soak it all in. Like, I just enjoy being in that. And so that might make it less of an obstacle for me than it might be for other folks where, yeah, I had no idea what was going on half the time either, but I just thought that was fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of where I kind of came in on, too. I didn't feel like exhausted by it as much as sort of like, it's like, oh, no more weird lore that I don't understand. Like, the thing with the whole, the grave, like, oh, there's a grave underneath the grave. But the grave underneath the grave, they've done it perpendicular. Like, oh, what does that shit mean? Like that's going to make him, that's going to make him mad.
One,
like,
but one of them will know, though. Ah, they do. Look at that. Yeah.
Well, that was it. That, see, I love that part of it, too, because like, they'd be like, well, this is this thing. And then they would do a thing, and they'd be like, nah, oops, we didn't carry the tool.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Oops.
that ritual thing, that farmhouse thing, where the guys are like, we got to stay here because it's like raining. We can't go. And like, yeah, we got to do this whole ritual. And we got to do this thing. We got to do the blood, the salt, the thing, and add a little bit of paprika, and this, that, whatever. Yeah, and then that whole bit. And then they're like, it just fucking doesn't work. It's just like,
but
like,
we're keeping your money.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, there was an undercurrent of that too, which I dug, which is like, they're just, you never really fully commit to them being like knowing what they're doing. I never fully commit to them being like just crooks. Like, there's not like a definitive thing there. So it's like, mm-hmm. every time one of these things goes along, you're almost like in a weird way, like rooting for them in some strange sort of way. Like, well, come on, guys.
They're like professional hunters, right? Like, you might be really good with like your gun or your bow and arrow or whatever weapon, but like, if you just don't run into any deer, you still come back with nothing, like a total schmuck. So like, if they're hunting, getting rid of ghosts or whatever, it's like, yeah, I guess just no ghosts today. Put up more bait.
Well, and like then the fucking, and then the scenes with the lady, with the not the daughter, the not the granddaughter, the whoever the family member was, and then the original thing of like, yeah, well, we figured out part of the problem was that, yeah, this was buried in a bad way, and they're covering up this other thing, so we gotta do this whole deal, and we gotta move it over here so that this, that, whatever. And she's like, nah, like, no, you don't understand. Like, if we don't do it this way, this thing's going to do the X, Y, and Z, or else, like, well, I'll get back to you. Like, the fate of the free world, let's rest your hands, Senator. And it's like, well, I got a tea time. And it's like, and so and then she comes back on the scene, and then it's sort of like, okay, well, yeah, I do the thing. And it's like, okay. And then it just sort of, you kind of feel like there's no chance they're going to be successful. it's like, well, do I want to be successful, or like, do I think this is real? And then the eight foot samurai guy like makes the scene. And you're like,
right,
all right, this dynamic has changed very drastically. Like, this is not just sort of like a cursy type of a, you know, small thing. Like, this has become epic size, and it's like, well, now what the fuck were we doing?
Yeah, it's like having the Plunkett's guy come over for hearing scratching in the walls and being like, oh shit, it was not nice.
Well, and the way the whole thing resolves itself, that was like, and then the last 20 minutes of this are just sort of are wild. Like, it's just, they're still discovering shit, like, right up until they sort of solve it. Like, they still, you know, like, didn't they discover that the gravestone, like, they kind of like did like a switcheroo kind of thing, and they're like, oh, whoops, yeah, they just did it backwards. Like, yeah, it was just like across the streams, it'll be all right. Like, oh, okay, cool, let's just give that a go. And they're like, well, that worked somehow. It's just like, all right,
there's metal stakes that either the Chinese or the Japanese, sorry, buried in Korea. Right, according to the movie.
Right.
And one of them is in the grave, and the samurai is guarding it.
Yeah.
And the guy is looking for the stake in the grave, in the mud, along with the lady from Poltergeist, who's like, you just move the headstones. He finds out that the stone, the samurai sword, is the stake, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And manages to pull it and behead the samurai. Okay, so I did understand this movie.
I think you got it.
I just don't know what any of that means.
Right. I mean,
what does it mean if you're a Korean? Like, is that a legend that they, to like, help keep Korea divided, they pounded a bunch of metal stakes in, and I don't know.
Well, and that's another thing too, is that the scale of it, the scale of what could potentially be happening changes from, like, you know, like we always talk about with Halloween, like if you're not in Haddonfield, like you're probably fine. Right. And it's like with this, it's like they go from, like, well, if you're not in the immediate area or somehow related, then generally speaking, like, you're probably going to come out of this okay, to like, this is an epic Godzilla-sized problem that's going to fuck up a ton of stuff, or it isn't. Like,
yeah, like this thing could end the world.
Yeah, you know? Or it's like, we're not sure. Like, oh, okay. And it's like, so then there's a level of urgency where, like, stop and having noodles. And you're like, don't stop and have noodles. Like, they don't have time for this. And they're like, don't eat protein. And then you see the guy, like, slurping down the thing. You're like, God damn it. Like, you know, it's like, you got to follow the rules. I follow the rules. Shit. Like, so there's a lot of that kind of, like, confusion, but not in a cloying way, I guess is the way to say it, where, like, mm-hmm. at any given point, like, sometimes they become, and certainly there's been ones that I've liked quite a bit that, you know, like, or, like, other people have not liked, or there's ones that I've liked. The Wailing is one where Josh did not like that one. I just love that one. And it's like, that one, The Wailing, is like, it's just turduckenly stuffed with nonsense that's contradictory and is confusing. And like, whereas this one, like, has a similar thing, but like, they're still going somewhere. You know, they don't just sort of sit in it, and it becomes more and more confusing. And so it's like, I'll give them a lot of credit for that, for sure. But yeah, it's an interesting experience with this whole deal. Almost felt like you could cut it into three parts and like make it like a mini series.
It could have been like 3 55-minute things. Could be a television event.
There you go.
Perhaps. It could have been a TV series about all of these people and the different cases they encountered, and that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, oh, sure.
I think maybe if just they take a half hour out of that first half, since ultimately it's like, just kidding. The real threat is under the grave, because under that grave there was a grave, and a grave and a grave and a grave in the box and the bog down at the valley. And yeah. So, like, I wasn't mad at this or bored by this, really, but by the end of it, I was like, for all the cool things that this has shown me, I can but shrug. And, you know, I don't feel great about that, but like, this is really well made. It just seems like it was holding some things back that I needed and was either too long or too short. If that helps nail down exactly what I mean. So for me, this was my weakest for the week. I would say it's a 6 3/4, Matt. I'm sorry, it is. It's a 6 3/4 out of 10 Switchblade Samurais.
Nice. I think this is the one I had the most fun with this week. I think my partly just
contrary
because
bastard.
I know, right? I think, yeah, just because, as I mentioned, like, when shit gets kind of nutty like that, and I go, oh God, there's just like, even just the potential that there's like this rule set that I'm just not familiar with is interesting to me. And like, that's just a weak spot is for gaining my interest on the cheap. Suspension of disbelief comes easy at that point. So yeah, I thought this was fun. I don't know that I understood everything, but I certainly enjoyed just kind of watching it all play out. And like, this would be a cool, like, oh, what's like a, you know, a weird movie that I've probably not watched. Like, this would be a fun recommendation. It might be a very hit or miss recommendation, but the odds are, I feel like no one would know what they're getting going in. And then they'd find out to their delight or dismay if they were mad at me, I guess. So, yeah, good times. I'd say like 8 out of 10, 8 out of 10. I wish the little terracotta warriors I used to have in my living room would be walking around doing stuff in my house. That'd be so fucking cool. All right, I'm over it now.
Well, and like, you know, and you get into any you know, Korean, Japanese, Thai, or Indonesian ones, you know, because we, all three of us, people ask us for recommendations at various times. You have to like qualify things. You're like, what is your spicy level? And just sort of like, you know, so like, you know, somebody like a Joko Anwar, you know, the guy did like fucking Satan's Slaves and, you know, Forbidden Door and those ones, like, those are not exactly like light fare, you know. Whereas, and then like something like a Wailing, where there's so many unexplained layers of inert strangeness that is a harder lift for sure. Whereas like something like this, because it is more linear, even though that's like a crazy person saying that, this would almost feel like it could be more accessible to folks, just because it doesn't push those things like a Joko Anwar movie would do, or it's not so confusing to where you just can't make heads or tails of any.
Yeah,
of
maybe any unfamiliar, but not inaccessible.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. So like, I would put that one more into that kind of category. So I would say, actually, I really like this quite a bit. So I would say, I'm gonna go 8 on this. I want to say 8 out of 10. Like, you really want to fuck up somebody's ancestors digging a vertical grave, because like digging a hole is hard enough.
Yeah, it is.
And digging a grave is hard enough, clearly, you know, from all context. But digging a vertical grave, good Christ, like, you've really got to be pissed at somebody to kind of go through all that nonsense. Out of 10.
I'm just thinking about some weird bit about how back in my day, gravediggers used the portrait orientation to dig graves, and like the kids today are all about the vertical graves because it's easier to film it on their phones. And I don't know, I didn't quite get there, but I went for it anyway.
Oh, that does somehow, I don't know how on earth this reminds me. I forgot to mention another one of the red eyes that I think would be right up your old alley, which was Tomb of Dracula, which is the 1980 TV movie adaptation of a comic book, of a Marvel comic, oddly enough. And this was like, these guys, they found a struck print of this. It's just about the best quality. Cause you can go on, like, I think like Vimeo, or you can find it around, but it's really hard to watch. Like this one, you could actually see stuff, and it was like, so they actually found somehow found this thing. And a great cantaloupe sized balls to actually show it. Cause you know, Marvel is a little on the litigious side, but they showed it, and it was like, and boy, that was an experience and a half. if you're not familiar with Tomb of Dracula, it's like it's a Marvel comic where Dracula takes over a cult, takes over a cult like derived from Satan, because he's just like annoyed with Satan pretty much, and Satan's like irritated. Like, they're like coworkers that just can't get along. And like,
good morning, Rob.
Yeah, it's just and it was. Boy, was that an experience! And God love if they could ever actually put something out for people to purchase or see, because it's a fucking trip. That thing, I put on my notes even to mention that to you guys, because like I said, I didn't know you could even get a copy of that that you could see, because I've seen parts of it, of course, in the past, but like, you know, it's always grainy and hard to see in little square kind of formatting, and this was like, you know, could fit on television. Like, oh, son of a bitch. But yeah, Tomb of Dracula, that was the other one that snuck in there. I forgot about that one. But anyway, yeah, so now I've fulfilled my duty. I did not forget.
Here we are.
Yay. I mean, yeah. Okay. We'll then take a quick break, and then we'll talk about the things we're going to watch next time.
Yes, sir.
So next time we're going to talk about movies, actually. We're going to do something weird. We're going to talk about 3 horror movies. And one of them is going to be in theaters starting this weekend. That's Long Legs. My interest in seeing this is tempered by the fact that whenever Osgood Perkins writes and directs a movie, it either bores me or makes me furious. So we'll see how it goes. He's matured as a filmmaker. Maybe this will be different. That's in the theater. We are also watching The Devil's Bath, which the loofah from hell. The Devil's Bath on Shudder. I've been told it's a somber rural thing that is also German. So will be just about as dire as you can get. Yep. And we're going to watch Men, the Alex Garland movie that, like, I've seen once and I'm interested in revisiting, because boy, did I not like it. So that'll be exciting for all of us. Long Legs in the theaters, Devil's Bath on Shudder, Men, wherever you get your VODs. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I say, you know, good night.
Cool. We will have a short next week. And because I kind of forgot we were recording tonight until right before we're recording, I didn't really watch any shorts today. So we're just going to take one that's at the top of my list of things to watch and hope it's good. So for next week, we'll be watching Killing Eric, which is a great title. So that's the short for next week. That'll be in the show notes.
Unless you're Eric.
I know, well, there you go. Unless, but we don't know. I mean, maybe Eric is one of those sociopaths from Lumberjack.
And well, fair enough.
I don't give a shit what you think.
He spells it with a K.
Probably. Always keep him guessing.
But it's in the beginning. It's in the beginning. It's a silent K. Like, dude.
Yeah, so you can find that at horseshothog.com. And all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And yeah, before you know it, we'll be talking to you again. But until that time, go do other stuff and be good. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
And be the anime thing where they can just string together a bunch of English words that make any fucking sense together.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh yeah, I love my peacock Egypt mailbox. It's about an ancient curse that turns schoolgirls into school women. And like, okay. whatever capsizes your vessel. Fine.
Oh my.
Yeah. Let's talk about the studded nightmare.
Yeah.
Studded nightmare?
You spent a little too much time in Southern California.
Should we rally? Oh my God, that would be so great.
Oh no. Oh, goodness. Like a podcast inside of Vocal that. Fry.
You guys are great. 3, 2, 1. So first up this evening, we have The Studded Nightmare, or La Taconada. No. I'm sorry. 3, 2, 1.